Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a little bit nervous and jumping the gun. Hey, everybody, Caleb Best and Midwest Muscle P4P Real Talk. And this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in the world. And if you're a drug-free athlete and looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your goals like a Mack truck through ice cream, check us out at P4PMuscle.com. And now let's talk. Hey, everybody, I'm trying to get Des on the line. I can see her, but she can't see me, so I'll try again. Des, can you hear me? Okay, let's do like the commercial. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine now.
All right, cool. So I'm here, you're here. Our listeners are here, so I think we're ready for a party.
We still need our guests.
Well, Adam said he was going to be here tonight, but I'm not sure. Have you heard from him?
We're going to hear from him soon. I don't know what's going on with this system we're using, but it seems to be something that's keeping us from all getting online at the same time. Sorry, listeners, we'll get this worked out. It's kind of embarrassing, but hey, you stay with us, we'll stay with you. Hey. So how are you doing?
Sometimes, what can you do? I am good. I am good. I'm ready. I'm just ready to get this weekend on the road. OCB Midwest States taking shape in DeKalb, Illinois, Saturday, November 19th. Should be a good show.
Oh, yeah, there is that. Oh, my God.
There is that. And you know what's crazy? So I did this show probably 3 years ago or so, the very first year that I started competing. And when I did this show, it was an IFPA event. Well, not an IFPA event, an NAMBF event, pro qualifier for the IFPA. And now it's under the OCB flag. So that's going to be a little bit different. But the funny part about this is Kaylin sends me this message of competitors from that show, and we were both there but had no idea who each other was. And he's like, how did I miss you? And I'm like, I don't know. How did I miss you? And there were actually several other athletes there that are now part of our circle, or at least now part of my circle. Kaylin probably was already familiar with them, that were also at that show, and I was just so new to the whole thing, absolutely no clue, was oblivious. Isn't that crazy? Small world.
It is so big. It's like you're right. It is so small, and there's so much that goes on that you don't think about, and you don't know who. I mean, cause, you know, I think the real big difference, and this is, like I said, this is back in the day, so, you know, it's coming out now, is that, you know, there was a lot of bucket list competitors that basically, you know, looked phenomenal because they poured their hearts into it, but then they never came back. And so, you know, it was a lot of coaches that you knew. There were a lot of names in the bodybuilding realm of natural competition that looked familiar, but you didn't really have names and faces. And I think that was like because I remember, like, you figure we had Ryan Doris was the guest poser at that show, and he has stepped out from that. Now he's, even though he's a pro, he's basically more into powerlifting and doing things, and he started his own company and supplement, and he basically hasn't been in the realm of natural competition. I mean, he's still a natural athlete, but he hasn't really stepped around the natural form or venue. So, you know, there was a lot of top names. There are a lot of top names that are still coming into light. But like you said, we've known them now for years, and it's like they seem to be a big splash in the pan for a lot of new people because they have done the work, and they, you know, they've grinded it out, and they've just been working really, really hard, and you know, yourself included. So it's a big step in the right direction, and I'm glad that the people that want to compete in the NPC are going there because they were not really slowing things down, but they didn't have the mindset to build up the natural community. So it is good that they removed themselves from it, because basically that's what was happening. And, you know, I still haven't heard from Adam, so, you know, we can do a little bit about the upcoming DeKalb, and maybe you have some highlights until we can get hold of Adam.
Well, you know what? You never know what we can come up with here. We never know what we can come up here when we reach back into our into our bag. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm struggling here on this one as far as highlights of the one show. I usually have you know, too much to try and cram into the beginning of the show, and tonight I'm kind of coasting. I'm thinking of food prep for tomorrow, making sure I have my bikini packed, my heels packed, make sure I have enough green beans to last me through the day, and get
well,
it going.
So what,
I'm sorry, folks. We're floundering here tonight, and that's kind of sad, but, you know, we always talk about we need to have a show in the can. We need to have a show in the can in case this happens.
The one thing you have to remember is that there was some big, big shows that just happened, and like the granddaddy of all. So, you know, we can talk about that, because there was a lot of things that I wanted to talk about, but since we were talking to Vicky and the DFAC, I didn't want to step on her organization as we covered them, because, you know, there was a – what I'm really impressed with the new way things are going, and this is from the competition level up. This is basically from the competitors deciding that they wanted true competition, and so they show up to the big show. Because it used to be where you had somebody that was going to win the show, and so when they realized this guy's been winning all year, nobody else would go. You know, so basically, if he's going to be there, then I'm not going to compete. And I thought that was one of the worst things for natural bodybuilding, especially in order for it to grow. And it really hurt the audience, because, you know, the people are coming there to see competition, and you basically have the one guy out there that's looking more than phenomenal, and basically people that, you know, won at, I don't want to say smaller shows, but really weren't prepped and ready to compete on the pro level, and yet they were out there simply because they didn't have anybody else to compete against the big guy at the time, or the big, you know, the big name. So now that has definitely changed. I noticed the change first in the women's competition, where they found out, you know, who's going to be where, and that's where I'm going. And I think, you know, Marshall Johnson really pushed the envelope. Cleveland Thomas really pushed the envelope. And there were other people that had basically stepped up to the game and changed everything. And I think that's what's important when you talk about that. Adam, are you with us?
Hey, what's up, Kaylin?
Hey, how's it going, buddy?
Yay!
I'm here. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties here.
Oh, that's all right. We've been struggling with that for days, weeks, months.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great when it works.
Yeah, tell me about it. And, you know, what is it they say? The best thing about live shows is that they're live, and the worst thing about live shows is that anything can happen. And we have living proof. Yeah, so Adam, just introduce yourself, please, and we'll take it from there.
What's up, guys? I'm Adam Wasson from Peoria, Illinois, 22 years old. Started out natural bodybuilding, it was about 4 years ago now. Actually met Kaylin at my first show, the NGA Heart of America in Washington. Met Kaylin there and did natural bodybuilding for a few years after that. And then got into more powerlifting. That's kind of what I've been competing in lately here, doing powerlifting. And then also got my own gym going, working with high school, college athletes, really trying to help them get to the next level. So just having a blast with that.
Nice.
And that's pretty much what we need is that, you know, there was so, you know, I said the one thing about the NPC and the IFBB is that they knew how to build a foundation. And that was the one thing the natural side struggled with, because basically it was, you know, who can show up to the show, and after you leave, then you're basically dismissed. And without that building up from the grassroots level, you didn't have the competitors coming in with the mindset, the posing, the structure to actually provide for the promoter what the promoter was providing for the competitor. And you and I know that John Abraham really knows how to address the competitor's needs and really take care of them. But because of the way we struggled without the lack of, I mean, from the lack of foundation, and basically what you're doing now is, you know, bringing them in with the understanding of what they can be, you know, not just as a competitor, but as a person that understands discipline, structure, and an understanding of hard work. Because, you know, there were times when you had classes, and yeah, we had plenty of people in the classes, but you would wonder, you know, well, who was their coach? Because it was so far removed from what a bodybuilder was supposed to look like as compared to somebody who came in with that pedigree and understanding of what it took to be a bodybuilder. So, Adam, thank you for that. And, you know, we'll cover that a little bit more. But we need to talk about something that you have been on a personal level that, you know, a lot of competitors struggle with. And that is, you know, we are really hard on ourselves. We're really hypercritical when it comes to judging or, you know, basically evaluating how we look. And, you know, it does become a strain for some sometimes, and it can be debilitating, and it can be depressing, and it can take away from a life that should be happy.
Definitely. No, I completely agree there. And that's, when I was in high school, I was not pretty overweight. I was very overweight, be classified obese. I was about 300 pounds, about 6 foot tall, and 300 pounds, and about a size 48 pants, so real big kid, and went through a lot of tough times, and just real low self-esteem, real low self-confidence, and with that came, I mean, I'd been struggling with depression since I was in about seventh grade, and so I just kind of let it go in a circle there, and I didn't really do anything because I was pretty depressed, and then I let it get to me that I didn't look like I wanted to look and didn't feel the way I wanted to feel, and so that got me down even more, so it was really kind of a vicious circle there, and it got to the point where I just kind of hit, it really was rock bottom. I was, there were times I was going through self-harm, I was suicidal, and it got to that point where I knew that there was just something had to change, and that's when I got into more, I started working out, and that was the one thing I knew how to change, so I went with that and ran with it and did just a complete lifestyle change, and wasn't easy by any means, but really got me to the place where I am today. And that's after I started that. Within about 12 months, I lost about 100 pounds, and about 18 months after that, I competed in my first bodybuilding show, and the one we were talking about, the NGA, and like I said, I was 300 pounds at my biggest, and I got down to, I competed at 178 for that one. So dropped quite a bit and really got a fire under my butt and ran with it and absolutely loved it. And that's kind of what inspired me and motivated me to do what I'm doing now, just working with younger athletes and helping. I don't do a whole lot of bodybuilding coaching, but I've got some friends that I've worked with a little bit, and just having a blast with that and working with any kind of young athlete and high school athletes, college athletes especially, because I can really relate and just know that, kind of understand the struggles that they go through, everything that happens in their day-to-day lives, and it really resonates with me still. So just kind of giving them that little motivation just to keep them going really is what I love to do.
Well, first of all, Adam, I just want to say thank you for joining us and sharing your story with us. You know, our listeners are always asking for more about issues or challenges that are, you know, real issues and challenges that are impacting athletes that are out there. So we definitely appreciate you sharing that with us. So you had said that you had been experiencing depression since a younger age, but what was it that finally triggered for you that's what it was that you were feeling, that you were depressed? Because a lot of times people don't understand that they are depressed. They think, oh, maybe I just need more sleep, or I'm just in a funk, or, you know, what was it that, you know, finally led you to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is depression. This is a real thing and I need to address it.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was seventh grade, so I was younger. And I mean, I didn't really even know what depression was. I mean, I'd heard about it and everything that way, but never thought like, oh, this is something that I could be going through or anything that way. So it was one of those where I was missing just lots and lots of school and couldn't get out of bed in the morning, just didn't feel sick, but didn't feel just physically like I couldn't get out of bed in the morning. And so my parents, I mean, I've got a really great family. Parents have always been incredibly supportive. And I mean, I know that they saw something was going on, so they took me to my doctor, and that's when the doctor kind of was like, this is depression, it's textbook case. And so I started seeing different counselors and got on antidepressants, and that's when it really started to, I mean, it dawned on me that that's what was going on. And it was great to know that it wasn't just that something was wrong with specifically me, and it wasn't just that I was messed up, but it was something that there was a name for. It was an illness. At first it was kind of, I mean, it was found out I had depression. It was a little bit depressing, for lack of a better word, but
sure.
After kind of talking to some counselors and different things that way, it was nice to know that I wasn't alone and that this was something that people struggle with, and it wasn't just that there was something wrong with me specifically, that I couldn't get out of bed in the morning and that I couldn't get to school.
Well, you know, there's something else that you brought in, and I'm glad you brought it up, is that you did have do have a great support group. There's plenty of people that are in your corner, and there's plenty of things that would seem like, okay, then how can this guy be depressed when there's so many people that are willing to go to bat for you? But I think they're missing the point of what you're saying. So, you know, I don't want to ask you to elaborate more because you've already said enough, but I think that we need our listeners to go a little bit deeper, because one question I just got, and it's saying, you know, what is your background? You know, did you have a family that was abusive? And I know better. So if you could speak about that and maybe open up some eyes and minds about this.
Oh, definitely. And that's one that I'm more than happy to talk about, because I feel like that is one of the biggest kind of misconceptions about depression. And that's, when I was growing up, I had my parents were together. I was blessed that way. Parents were together. We were real active in our church. They were active in my school. My mom was always a room mother, would come in and help with holiday parties, everything that way. Both my parents had jobs. Everything was great that way. I mean, we were middle income, middle class family, just in kind of suburban America. And I would get home from school normally, and I would go out and play basketball in the neighborhood until it got dark out. And I would come home and we would eat dinner as a family, and everything was great that way. So it's one of those where nothing was wrong that way. There was never anything, nothing traumatic, anything that way that really triggered the depression. And like I said, that's one of the biggest misconceptions in my mind about depression, is that people think, oh, well, this guy's got such a great life, but he's got this depression. And I mean, you see people from all different walks of life that suffer from depression. It's 25% of adults are suffering from depression right now, no matter really what walk of life they're in, anything that way. And so it's one way I like to think of it is, if something happens, if a loved one dies, or if something, you lose your job and you feel down and you have a few days where you have trouble getting out of bed and it bothers you to think about things, well, that's sadness. That's a completely normal human emotion there. Everybody, I mean, if you can't experience sadness, then there's something even more wrong there. So everybody experiences that sadness at some point in their life. And the difference with sadness and depression is you're feeling that exact same way when everything is going right for you. When you've got that great family, you've got a great job, you've got lots of friends and lots of people who are there for you, but you can't focus on that at all because there's a chemical imbalance in your brain that won't let you be happy about the things that you have, and all you can focus on is how awful you feel.
And I'm glad that you provide some perspective and clarification on that, because it it doesn't always have to be something traumatic that triggers it, although that's also the case. There's lots of different forms of depression that manifests itself in different ways. But I also like that you've shared that it's not just mental or emotional, but that it's also physical. You can feel it in physical ways that you might not normally identify as that's what it is either, because you also said, you know, you couldn't get out of bed. And maybe that was just maybe that part of it was emotional. Or maybe part of it was just like, you know what, my body's just not moving for me today. It's not working.
Right.
You know, was it? Yeah.
And that's, I mean, so, a lot of times with depression, it kind of does. It makes you, it's tiring in itself. But then when you go out and you're around people, because of that stigma that is around depression, you feel like you have to put on this face and act like nothing's bothering you.
Yes.
Act like everything okay, because you don't want that judgment. And during high school, that was the worst for me, because I would walk down the hall and I would have to put on this face because I was terrified of people whispering, oh, that's the kid who's on pills for depression, or that's the kid who cuts himself, or anything that way. So it would terrify me that way. So I would go through the entire day acting like nothing was wrong. And when you're already tired from the depression and tired from just overthinking everything, and then you've got to do that act along with it, it's exhausting.
Yes.
Well, you know, there's also the facet, like you said, of being in high school and having to deal, I mean, because even with, well, not even with, more so with social media, just how terrible people at that age can be when they do find the person that doesn't quite fit in, or basically can be shunned and picked on, because it seems like it's more so now than it was when I was going to high school. I mean, you did have the people that just didn't fit in, and there you didn't have the jock, you didn't have the bookworm. There was always just somebody that would sit in the corner. But suicide has skyrocketed in this generation, especially yours. And I'm glad that you're willing to pull some of those kids out away from that kind of thinking, because it is an issue, and it's a major issue, especially in this nation, especially in this time, where people don't really understand how much suffering is going on. Because, you know, like you said, you grew up in a situation where everything seemed to be right, just it was something, you know, not right with you, where you were having the problem of depression. But there are a lot of people that are growing up where there is a lot of major factors that bring about depression. And depression is a double-edged sword, because depression is depressing. And it takes away from your day. It takes away from your life. It takes away from your being. And a human body is not meant to stay in a negative state for very long. And, you know, like you said, sleep will not recover that. People doing well-wishing doesn't recover it. Parties don't help. There's so many things that you have to deal with at that age. You know, my God, it's just impressive that you were able to make it through. So when you're dealing, well, okay, here's another question for you, Adam. And it says, at your age, how did you find the balance to pull yourself back? I think they mean to normal, to pull yourself back from basically falling off the edge.
And that's the tough part there, because I was real close to the edge at some points. And there was one night where it was just, everything was, felt like the world was collapsed on me, and I was on the edge. And so at that point I realized that there were literally only two options for me. And in my mind it was one or the other. I could either just end it, which I'd thought about before, or I could make a complete change. And so at that time, the real thing that kept me going was the loving family I had and the support that I had, and I just couldn't imagine doing that to them, which I'm glad that I still had that mindset, because I know a lot of times when people get that close, they can't even see that they would be hurting anyone else, because it hurts them so much.
Yeah, they think they're doing a favor, kind of, is what I've heard.
Right, exactly. And that's one where I'm lucky because my parents always made sure to tell me how loved I was, and I had friends there and had a cousin who was always made sure to tell me how much I meant to them. So that constant reassurance was really what saved me more than anything. But then that night when I was close to just calling it in, but like I said, I had to make that choice, and so I decided that, and I've still got the note card that I wrote it on 4 years ago now, and I wrote on a note card just a scrap of paper that I found laying in my room that I swear to God, no matter what it takes, I will do anything to never feel this way in my life again. And I made that promise to myself, and I made that promise to my family and everybody who'd been there for me. And that's really, I just had to make that change. And that's, I've referred to it, I've talked about it before and kind of called it like that, called it the Phoenix theory. Like there's the mythical bird, the Phoenix, where it dies and then it rises from its ashes, and it's even more beautiful and majestic than before. And that's really kind of, I mean, it sounds kind of cliche or cheesy, but that's the best way I can think to describe it. Because that night I kind of, without actually doing anything or actually ending it for myself, I really did kind of, the old me, I kind of let that go and let that die and just completely was able to change my mindset. And like I said, it didn't all come at once and it wasn't easy by any means, but I knew that if I didn't change something, I was going to be right back in that spot, right back wondering if I did need to just completely end it there. And so that's what did it there. It was just kind of hitting rock bottom and then completely changing everything.
Wow. I mean, that's just really, you do just have a moving story, and it does start with the choice to draw your line in the sand and be like, I'm not going to go any further than this. From here, I am going to change. And that for so many people. And I know this was, so many parts to this picture, to your journey of getting well again. But I would like to hear more about, so loving family, great support group. They evidently got you in touch with the right doctors, the right psychologists, you had prescriptions that worked for you. Tell us how the fitness rounded out that picture for you.
So really, like I said, it was kind of the point where the only thing I knew completely how to change of myself, it was kind of my body and that one. So it was just, I didn't really know what else to do. I was already taking antidepressants. I was already seeing doctors and different stuff that way. So I'd never been happy with the way I looked. I'd always been the fat kid. So that's when I decided that, okay, well, I'm going to change the way I look and we'll see if this works. And so once I started doing it, I had always lifted with football, but never really worked out that hard. It was always kind of just going in the weight room when you have to and everything. So I started really training and actually lifting hard and looking, just reading anything I could on bodybuilding.com or really wherever I could. And then once I started to kind of see some results, I felt better about myself then. And now looking back at when I've read more about like kind of the science behind your brain and exercise and everything that way, I realized that another part of the reason I was feeling better was because I had more oxytocin and more serotonin and everything was starting to work better that way too, which I didn't even realize at the time. And so I started seeing the results, and just when I saw that, I was even hungrier for it and kept going and pushing more and more.
And when you saw your body changing, I mean, what was that like for you? I mean, I've been genetically blessed that I've never really had an issue with my weight, but I'm always so moved by people when they share their experiences of when they're finally realizing that their body's changing, their goals are becoming a reality. I mean, what did that feel like? I mean, did that just, in your words, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And that's, the very first when I really started to see some changes in the mirror, it was I started to see the scale move, and I was maybe losing 5-6 pounds, and I felt really good about that. And then after I started, maybe after it was about 15 or 20 pounds, I really started to notice that, I mean, I'd always had a big belly, and that was starting to go away, and my pants were fitting much looser, and I was going, I mean, I went from a 48, and within a few months, I was down to like a 40, and that just felt absolutely incredible to me. And it was one of those where it almost is like a, almost kind of a superhuman feeling that you can do, make your body change that way. And at that point, like I said, that's when I really knew that, well, if I've done this, like I can push even more and push even more. And then within about a year after I started, I had always wanted to be below 200 pounds. I hadn't been below 200 pounds since I was in seventh grade. And so about a year after I started, a little less than a year, I broke the 200 pound mark. And when I saw that, that was one of the first times that, like, I got incredibly emotional about it. And when I did that, like, actually, I mean, I broke down in tears. Like, I felt like I had really achieved a goal that I was, had set out for and had been on this quest for such a long time. And that one, I hadn't really, at that point, I hadn't really looked back on, I'd been trying to kind of block out where I'd been, and I'd been trying to block out the depression, because it was something that I was like, okay, this is my past. Like, I'm just going to keep moving forward, and it's not bothering me anymore. So I'm just going to keep blocking it out. But when I hit that, it kind of, I had to do a moment of self-reflection, and I really just kind of saw how far I'd come and where I had been and the reason I had started. And it, I just kind of broke down, and it was the first time I, and I don't know if I ever had before, but the first time I'd really tears of happiness, instead of all the times that I had spent in my room by myself just crying because of how upset I was or how depressed I was. And so that was an absolutely incredible moment for me.
Wow. Another question from one of the listeners, from Jeremy. He says, how were you able to speak to your family and break the news about what was really going on with you?
That's like, in that part, looking back, I didn't really go about it quite the right way, because when everything, when it got as bad as it did, it was one of those where I felt like I'd kind of, almost like I'd let them down a little bit because of everything they'd done for me, and they'd been trying so hard. So I felt even more guilty about that. And so when it got to the point where it was really bad, I didn't even really mention it to anybody at the time. I had one cousin who I told, who was, I've really, really close with, and is like a brother to me, and he was there for me, and he helped me a lot with that. But I really kept it to myself, and it wasn't until a few months ago that I actually kind of told my parents how bad it had gotten at times, and how bad it really was, and how close I was to the edge with it. And it's one of those where I felt like at the time it would have been helpful had I told them, and had I maybe been able to get a little more help. But look, that's hindsight 2020. And now that it felt good to be able to actually tell them that, get it off my chest, and kind of let them know where I had been. But to also, at the same time, it wasn't like I was telling them to worry them or anything like that. It was more of a thanking them for everything they had done then and everything they've done since to help me get past those moments and to get me to where I am now.
Well, and it's got to be a tough thing too, if you don't even quite understand what's going on with you, to be able to communicate that to the people around you, especially if you do, like you said, have feelings of guilt or that you're somehow letting them down. You're not going to verbalize that or magnify
right.
that. So it's not always, well, I don't know that it's ever easy to try to come out and say, you know, something like that to the people who love you. But so you've had this amazing journey, and it's led you to a point where you're now taking that experience to help other teenagers. Tell us how that program got started and just kind of how it's grown and where you see it going.
So it started about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago now. I had guy that I knew from the gym who was opening his own gym. It was House of Speed. It's a franchise. And so he was opening that in the Peoria area to kind of start helping younger athletes. And he came to me. I was actually a strength coach at Peoria Notre Dame High School, our local high school that I went to here in town. And I was the assistant strength coach for the football team. And so he came to me and said, hey, I know you're doing this. Like, I'm opening this gym. We do more agility, speed work, but if you want to, you can start doing some weight training stuff. And so I started doing that, and it started with one squat rack in the corner, and within a few months, it got to the point where we started renting out a separate part of the building because it had grown so big, and had my own room that way. And then just this summer, about 6 months ago here, it was in late June, I got the opportunity to buy out the weight training part of it. The gym was moving and things were kind of going different directions. So I was able to buy out the weight training part, and just an incredible opportunity, because now I've been able to expand even more and really just kind of help more athletes and do what I love to do. So it's one of those where I never want to be just a gym. I enjoy connecting with the athletes and just love going to do their sports or do their events. And so it's been incredible opportunity that way. And in the future, I plan to just keep growing. I started about 2 months ago, I started renting out a new area and a new gym, a little bit bigger. And we're already growing even more so now, working with a couple high schools in the area. And so I'd really like to get into more high schools and kind of help to just help kids use weight training and strength training to not only get stronger for their sport, but just for life. And it's one of those, like I said, with connecting with athletes, I'm always kind of, I like to have the gym be their safe place and be just kind of a place where they can be themselves. Cause like I said, I know what it's like when you're going through high school and you're trying to act like nothing's wrong or act like there's nothing bothering you. So there's quite a few kids that I've been able to really connect with, and we either just talk about what's going on and I'll just listen, or we'll talk about something completely different and just get their mind off it. And it can be just an hour or a few hours. I've kind of got an open door policy where, I mean, if I'm at the gym, you're more than welcome to be at the gym. And I've had a few kids, like a kid last year who he was going through some tough times with high school, just making college decisions. And I started making sure that he was always scheduled it pretty close to the end of the night, because then he would stick around for an hour or two after I closed, and maybe I was getting my workout and he'd just stick around and hang out and we would just talk. And it's one of those that's awesome, because after he graduated, he got a hold of me and we went to lunch one day, and he just told me he wanted to thank me because of how much I'd helped him. And he told me some things that he was going through that he hadn't told me at the time, but just told me how much it helped to have that where he could come in here and just talk and get his mind off of everything else. And that was one that was incredibly powerful to me, because it was the first time I really felt like I'd personally made a difference in somebody's life. And it's incredible feeling that way. So that's what I really want to keep doing for these young athletes and high school, college kids, just helping them, just give them that place where they can be themselves and not have to worry about what anybody else thinks of them, but just be who they are, for even if it is just an hour or a few hours.
Hey, that's a lifetime. Trust me, that's more than a lifetime when you're basically down and out. And Adam, I can't speak well enough of what you're doing. It means so much. And there's about 12 thank you from the listeners. They're really impressed, especially with your age and your willingness to give back. And that's very vital, and it's also very important, because honestly, you just never know how a person's day is going because you're not in that situation and you're not in that moment. And I know you can speak well of that situation where being in that moment, it seems like it envelops you. It can pull you under, like you were saying, where you got so close to the line, or it could take you out. And like I said, suicide has skyrocketed in this nation, where it's at an alarming rate, where people don't feel like they can speak about it, because there is an inward pain that a lot of people on the outside don't see, recognize, or care to deal with because, you know, everybody's got their own issue or trouble. So, you know, if you could just speak about your support group, give a thank you to them, because I know you have plenty of people that have been there. And I just want to say thank you for reaching out after everything was said and done to help others, because that's also a key component to recovery as well.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on. And like you said, my support group, it's been incredible for me. And my mom and my dad, and I've got a sister who's a few years older than me who's been awesome. And that's, I've got a few friends who've been there for me, who really helped me throughout the entire thing. It's my cousin Andrew that I was talking about, and he's more of a brother to me than anything. I've got another friend, Billy, who's like a brother to me, and friend Christina and Mary, who were there with me through the entire thing. And now I've got, it's incredible to see, because I felt like I had an incredible support group then, and it's just grown even more now. I'm part of a powerlifting team that's absolutely awesome. It's Team Franklin, WT Franklin here in Peoria, and everybody on that team is absolutely incredible. And my family's still there for me all the time, and my cousin and my sister, and I've got an awesome girlfriend, Jenny, now, and she's there for me, and she makes me want to be even better of a person and motivates me every day. So I'm lucky. I'm blessed that way.
Sweet. Well, and you continue to bless those around you. So we, again, thanks for taking the time for being with us on the show. I know I've really enjoyed it, and it sounds like our listeners and Kaylin have too. So you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing, and have an awesome Thanksgiving. Definitely lots and lots to be thankful for.
Oh,
amen to that.
Amen. Yeah, thank you guys so much. And if you're ever around Peoria, I'd love to have you guys by the gym.
Oh, my gosh.
It would be
right there, Kaylin. Sounds like a video live opportunity, a Facebook live opportunity right there.
It is.
Perfect.
We'll have to get that planned. All right. Have an awesome night, Adam.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
I tell you, what started out to be a pretty chaotic show wound up to be a pretty awesome show. I am always amazed by our guests. Always.
Yes. I mean, at his age, going through what he – and this is the thing, and I think one of the main reasons I wanted him on the show is because in this day and age, social media can be so brutal, so harmful, and so destructive. Especially when you're already at a mental state of basically not wanting to be a part of life. And
yes,
listening to him and everything that he had gone through, because, you know, when you're mentally not prepared, when it's just a mental beating every day, you can always be on the outside looking in, talking about what you could do. And like he said, with hindsight, it is 2020, and you're like, well, I wouldn't have done that. But what would you have done if you don't know what's going on? And it's something to think about.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's always, you're right, it's easy to say what you would have done, not actually having been there. So it is something to think about. And for anybody out there who's maybe felt some of the same things as Adam, please know you're not alone, and do reach out to somebody, because 10 to 1, you have plenty of people like he does that love you and want to support you, you know, as best that they can. So definitely you don't have to go through these things alone.
Exactly.
And, yep, and it's good that, and I'm always happy when the health and wellness factor in things can help improve someone's life picture. So always happy to hear that as well. And we, my friend, are running out of time, and sometimes we get cut off. Sometimes it lets us record long. So it's always best to try and end on time if we can. So Kaylin, your snickerdoodle shout out.
Snickerdoodle.
All right. So tomorrow I'm traveling to DeKalb. Kaylin will be traveling that way shortly. So please wish all of the athletes competing at the OCB Midwest good luck. And just remember, we all have much to be thankful for in some way, shape, or form. And On behalf of myself, Kaylin, and P4P Muscle, your body is a temple. Let's build it.